attention this morning in order to welcome you to the United Lodge of Theosophists in the City of Philadelphia, one of countless lodges located all over the world. And we suggest that if this is your first time here, that you stop at the book table, the usher's table there, and pick up one of these little pamphlets, because in here you'll find the program that covers at least 3 months of programs that will take place here. But it's our policy to read the declaration of the ULT to familiarize yourself with the purpose and the aim. And as I've said, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. As to the founders, we are spreading broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Hugh Judge. Now the work and the end it keeps in view really are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles, and that through a true realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. Now, it holds that the unassailable basis for union, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And therefore, we don't have a constitution, no bylaws, no offices. The sole bond between its associates being that basis just mentioned. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. As to theosophists, it regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race or creed or sex or condition or organization. And everyone is welcome, all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who really desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be better able to help and teach others. Therefore, the theosophy belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. As stated, this declaration is printed on the back with other information as to the lodges located around the world. Inside, you will find a list of the programs for the coming week. This is October the 27th, and the topic will be Who is a Theosophist? And as you see, the meetings for every Sunday in November and December are listed. Now, the Wednesday and Sunday meeting, as you see, started promptly at 11 o'clock and will be over by noon. Doors open at 11:30, so you can come in and acquaint yourself with the location. Now, Wednesday meetings begin promptly at 7:45, but the doors open at 5:30 so that you can come in and spend time in the library, spend time at the book table, meet other interested inquirers, and familiarize yourself with the location. The books in the library are reference books, and you will find ordinary reference books in addition to the theosophical literature that you might look over the topics. And in the middle room, you'll see someone, a volunteer, we're all volunteers, who will introduce you to the books for sale and pamphlets for sale. They're very, very reasonably priced, so that you, if you wish, you can carry those home with you. And it's our favorite comment when it's our opportunity to volunteer to give these declarations that we take these and maybe stick it in the pocket and carry it around with you, and then familiarize yourself in detail as to what is printed on here. We would like to inform you today's topic will be who is a theosophist, during which you will have a short talk, after which everyone in the audience is welcome to raise their hand, ask questions, or even make comments if they wish. Thank you very much.
We have another volunteer who will give us a brief talk. It's a forum this morning, so we're all set.
A theosophist, in the Theosophical Glossary, is a name by which many mystics at various periods of history have called themselves. The Neoplatonists of Alexandria were theosophists. The alchemists and Kabbalists during the medieval ages were likewise so called, and other kinds of mystics, whether acting independently or incorporated in a brotherhood of society. All real lovers of divine wisdom and truth had and have a right to that name. Now, just a minute or so ago, we heard the declaration of the philosophy of theosophy. So you now know who the United Lodge of Theosophists regard as theosophists, and that is all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And that just sounds like a lot like the definition in the glossary. You will notice that there isn't a footnote to see another page or an addendum to that declaration. There isn't any standard, a list of traits, characteristics, or qualities spelled out in that declaration that first must be met to be considered a theosophist. The words, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, certainly make it clear that even age isn't considered an exclusionary distinction. But if we look further at the declaration, there is a special class, a unique group of theosophists mentioned at the very end. It says the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, and yet belongs to each and all. It's a very curious sentence, to say the least. Why doesn't it say all theosophists instead of true theosophists? What we know of this over 100-year-old document is that every single word used was vetted very carefully for its exact meaning, and therefore what it says is precisely what it means. So what is it actually saying when it says true theosophist instead of all theosophists? Perhaps if we understand the solemn injunction from the Bible's book of Joshua, come ye this day, or excuse me, it's choose ye this day whom ye will serve, the light will be brighter. It simply means that there are choices to be made, life-changing choices, and only you can make them. There obviously has got to be a difference between a true theosophist and all others. So let's take a look at that for a minute. If you look around this room right now, you might find it hard to believe that there are many theosophists in the world. And with your indulgence, in order to further define them, I'd like to divide that group of all theosophists into three groups. The first group we'll look at is unfortunately the greatest in number. These folks see in theosophy a belief, a theory, a speculation, something to be accepted or rejected. They approve or disapprove, they like or dislike what they hear or read, according to whether or not it agrees with their own prejudices and preconceptions. They are not seekers of truth. They merely seek out confirmation of their own beliefs. The second group have come to realize that theosophy is more than a mere belief, and more than just something to be accepted or rejected, and they recognize the inherent reasonableness of its teachings. They see in the teachings a system of knowledge, overwhelming in magnitude, but nonetheless convinced of its truth and value. They set out to seek on a great intellectual effort and to acquire that theosophical knowledge. They seek this knowledge only and have no interest in applying it in their lives. To them, it's all about knowing. The third group is for those that see theosophy as more than a belief, more than a great body of knowledge. It is a mode of living. They desire to make theosophy a living power in their lives, not for their benefit, but as a beneficent stream for all they come in contact with. This is the true theosophist. It is he who works patiently, faithfully, and unceasingly for the cause of truth and humanity, and finds his compensation in so doing. His course is determined by no fee or reward, no recognition that comes to him or his work, for he rather shrinks from that than covets such recognition. He needs it not, he desires it not, nor is his course shaped by the apparent success or failure even of truth in itself, or the cause it espouses. For there can be neither success or failure, but only truth. Deep down is the consciousness that he is becoming other than what he was. He pauses not either to rejoice or to mourn, but presses forward. There is joy in the center of his house, and he knows that darkness is fleeing before him. Yet he pauses not even to covet the light. If he is checked and restrained, he waits. He desires nothing, and all things are at his command. He makes no bluster, creates no noise, but he silently aspires and inspires and encourages by his very presence. The silent clasp of his hand is more than words, and the gentle beaming of his eye is more than pity. He removes obstacles by not seeing them. He seeks no power or place and desires none, since he sees that place and pains go hand in hand, and yet he shirks neither, well knowing that with a larger place comes larger duty and opportunity. Perhaps these three classes or aspects of a theosophist could have been divided as to motive, whether selfish or unselfish, whether enlisting to serve the truth for their own sake or for its own sake, or as to zeal or apathy. This latter quality is determined by temperament rather than by motive. But in this temperament or complexion of the soul, motive has already had much to do with it. It hardly seems to have occurred to the majority, even in the movement, that the lines in all directions are drawn by a singular word. And that word, of course, is brotherhood. They seek to understand the mysteries of the universe and the bonds that unite the universe, humanity, and the divine. Unity in everything in the universe implies and justifies a theosophist belief in the existence of a knowledge at once scientific, philosophical, and religious, showing the necessity and actuality of the connection of man and all things in the universe with each other. So which group of the three mentioned do you feel an association with? Perhaps, just perhaps, if we follow the words of the 19th century reverend, author, and poet Charles Kingsley, you will know which group you associate with. And he said, to paraphrase, never, never if possible, go to bed at night without being able to say, I have made at least one human being a little wiser, a little happier, or a little better this day. Today's topic, once again, who is a theosophist?
It's a wonderful little question, isn't it? Deceptively simple. And I bet you came to the room this morning with plenty of considerations of your own on this subject. Yes.
I always decline to say I am a theosophist because to me a theosophist is the Buddha. Therefore, I aspire to that. I think I may change my mind based on that talk.
It's a very interesting concept, and we're reminded of that first fundamental proposition of the philosophy, something that we are asked to consider as a starting point, that everything in manifestation, the infinity of what we see around us, is actually rooted in the One. So when you're trying to define, in the American tendency to define what a theosophist is, we're reminded that there's this oneness of soul, there's this oneness of potentiality from which all manifests. And so is there any such thing as a great theosophist or a potential theosophist? Many times you'll hear in these rooms, I'm a student of theosophy, as the comment was just made. Sometimes you'll hear a gentle, kind of a smiling comment being made about a closeted theosophist, someone who's never heard of that term, doesn't know anything about the philosophy. But boy, if you look at the life led, at the actions done, you might say, hey, that's really a theosophist. So there's this oneness behind and within and about, embedded in each of our characters, our souls, a potential, but there's an array. There's that guru parampara chain from the greatest that we can imagine or remember of a historical personage down to and inclusive of those who would become if only they knew. Yeah.
We're wondering, the definition of a true theosophist, would that be somebody who's on the path to adeptship?
Would it be someone who's on the path to adeptship? Thoughts? Yes?
Well, we would say no if that was their purpose in approaching theosophy. But yes, if their goal was to serve humanity, then they couldn't help but be on that path.
So really, you know, we're warned so many places in the theosophical literature not to judge the karma and potential or the path of someone else, rather turn within and judge our own motives and line up our walk and our talk. If indeed we premise that there is an absolute with all potential powers imaginable, resident, reflecting out of that, then any effort is never lost, as long as the effort is heartfelt, sincere devotion to being ethical, to being altruistic. And it may very well be that the closeted theosophist, the soul who is unknowing of the term or the philosophy, is putting forth such a divine effort, such a pure motive each day to help the other, to help the future of humanity, to relieve the plight of the poor, however we want to see that, that spirit in action within actually is a stepping stone toward tremendous perfection in the long range. But the motive is in the here and now, and the doing, the spiritual vision in action. Yeah.
What the Declaration states is found in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Carew Judge. And we hear the advice, familiarize ourselves with those three fundamental propositions before proceeding to get a handle, to use that term, on the term theosophy and theosophist. Well, what do they say that would lead me in the right direction? Those principles.
Well. The principles themselves?
Yes, because it says that in the doctrine that you have to familiarize yourself with these before continuing.
The philosophy offers, through the writings of the two co-founders of the modern movement, three guideposts that we're invited to consider, not to swallow wholesale, not to believe blindly, but rather three pivotal points to consider. One would be if we would consider that there is an absolute beingness, a deific essence or energy, however you want to bring words to that vision, that periodically emanates, and it is beyond attributes as we might know it at this plane. So if we're trying to determine, if we've got an intuition that there's a writer or a poet or a modern psychologist or a TV personality, if we're trying to consider, is that person a theosophist? What is it that they're saying and doing? Does it line up with a oneness, a unity behind all in manifestation, a oneness, an openness, an ethical basis that seems to stream forth in agreement with spiritual equality of all, of this tremendous evolutionary force of powers that finds its way to reflect on this plane in different forms? The second premise that we were asked to consider is that periodicity, cause and effect, cycles, karma and reincarnation, however you want to consider that there is this periodic pulse to life, an in-breathing and out-breathing, and that all effort, all thought generates an effect that will come automatically, absolutely, opportunity, if you will, opportunity to develop spiritual vision and action from the right premise. And there's another point that as we begin to consider it and begin to think about its applicability, that would be another commonality, that if there is a soul in our lives or there's someone we're reading or something that we're hearing about, if that other is talking about periodicity, cause and effect, karma and reincarnation, responsibility for self-growth and responsibility for the altruistic actions on behalf of the other, then we might be able to line that individual or that article or TV show, whatever it is, up with the philosophy. And the third point would be that there's a pivotal doctrine that once the human kingdom is reached, once soul is able to manifest in a self-conscious manner in the human kingdom, then there's the potential to impress or uplift all of life. that what is done within the individual as a center of spiritual growth harmonizes and adds impulse and strength or color or tone, whatever you want to consider, so that all can move forward and bloom as well on spiritual terms. So too, that might, if we begin to consider that and that seems to ring true to us, then we might use that as a measure for what is a theosophist. Yeah.
It seems to me that the drive behind altruistic and ethical behavior stems from an understanding of that unity of evolutionary humanity, of all humans and the entire evolution being as that one. If that understanding is there, how is an average person supposed to know that that unity, which resides on a higher plane fundamentally than the physical, how is an average person supposed to be cognizant of that higher plane if he never sees it, feels it, mm-hmm. and therefore be in touch nevertheless with that altruistic behavior?
You know, there's the question of how's the average person supposed to get in touch with the higher plane. There are many, many articles about point of view. And embedded in the comment that preceded the question is the notion that what a man knows of theosophy, what a human being knows about theosophy, he realizes about theosophists. So part of this exploration of what is great nature and what is human nature and how do the two mesh, part of the exploration of ancient philosophies and religions and science and how that all blends together, and part of the object of considering what are the powers resident in the human being spins around this notion that as soul living in these physical frames, working through these brains, as soul, as we study, as we begin to turn our thoughts back more and more to what's the commonality between this religion and that religion? How I see this person in pain in front of me, how is it I might meet them where they are and empower them to help themselves? What action might be the best ethically in this scenario? As we consistently develop this habit of turning mind and heart to, in this moment, what's the better action? What we're actually doing as soul is purifying and clarifying all those essences of the brain, the physical body, all the sheaths of the soul that are beyond the physical. And gradually across time, what will happen is that we'll become aware of an intuitive insight in the moment, a spark of this has to be said, this is how to help this person. Or there might be an intuitive moment, a sense of working with a small animal or being out in nature and seeing the oneness all of a sudden, almost without words. There's a sense, an intuitive sense of how there is a spiritual oneness to all. It may be across time that in addition to these intuitive flashes in our daily lives, we might wake up in the morning or after a deep sleep nap with a sense that we've gotten a message. Moving through life, if we've got some issue pending where it's really a puzzle, a problem, or a crisis that we have to face physically, we may find that the universe is speaking to us. We might hear or see the answer that we need in the lyric of a song or on a commercial or in a billboard or in a magazine that falls up open in a waiting room. And in those little catches, glimmers of time, the average human being can become very aware that life is not by accident and that even in a very limited fashion, what we can intuit, what we can discern by testing our intuition, by our logic. These so-called synchronicities or coincidences are actually a spiritual exercise. Yeah.
So it's become, you know, apparent to me through just different sources that the idea that everything is already perfect as it is, it just, that seems to kind of resonate true. And if we use that as a basis, this whole idea of being of service to humanity, I think we're narrowing it by saying that only someone who's being altruistic is being of service to humanity.
Uh-huh.
I think, for example, you know, I personally believe that there can't be good without bad. And there, you know, in the way of manifestation, you know, when something separates the good, actually, by definition, there has to be an equal and opposite that's part of it. So, you know, who's to say that that, quote, bad thing is not a theosophist as well? Because it's, you know, serving humanity in its own way. And I think that if I kind of, like, widen the lens and look at the big picture, it's perhaps easier for me to think of everybody as a theosophist, because in their own way, they're serving humanity. And so why is it so necessary to kind of discern and judge who's a theosophist?
In terms of discernment and judging, without a doubt, the only individual that as soul we can discern about or judge is the soul working within the body we live in. Because it's for us to wake up in the morning and consider how we'd like to use our energies for the good that day. It's for us to move through the day as mindfully as possible, as open-mindedly as possible. And then at the end of the day, it's for that individual to sit in contemplation or reflection, looking back at the day, making a determination, did I hit my mark? What did I learn? What opportunities are there? Trying to judge the motives of another is fraught with danger, because we cannot know all the considerations and the karmic conditioning that's going on there. We're also, in so many different articles, advised not to see karma as good or bad, but rather to try to stay in a moment, welcome the opportunity to learn and to perceive in the moment, regardless of what the condition is. Yeah.
We think perhaps instead of saying everything is perfect the way it is, it would be better to say everything is just the way it is.
Hmm.
The natural result of the causes that were set up. We're a long way from perfect, but we never stop having that potential. But you spoke of sometimes maybe the lyrics of a song will teach us or reach us. We recall when we began studying theosophy earnestly, we assumed all our problems would dissolve. I mean, isn't that an earning? And instead, we heard the truth in the lyrics of a song. I can see clearly now. I can see all obstacles in my way. And once you begin to realize that's all you need. If you created the problems, you didn't mean to, but if you created them, you're the only one who can fix them.
The two comments together brought something to mind, and that is in the declaration, we say that wonderful phrase that the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. There's that inclusivity. But also that the Lodge, the United Lodge of Theosophists, regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity. And that takes us to a consideration of what is altruism. If we're waiting for the perfect moment where somehow we think of altruism as public philanthropy, where there's skillions of dollars being done, names going up on walls and buildings, like the great robber barons did at the turn of the 20th century, where they were sharks in the business world and then turned around and did all these public charities with their tremendous wealth that's been accrued. If we stop and think, I can see clearer now. I can see all obstacles in my way. The suffering soul engaging in obstacles, leading the average life, is altruistic by trying to be theosophical or trying to be a student of theosophy. Not putting limits, not putting conditions, just trying to serve great nature and be part of a process of perfectibility. Not that there's a perfect end to reach, but that there's this process by which we can assist one another, we can assist animal, vegetable, mineral, we can assist in untold ways. Sometimes we really don't know what the medicine of a gentle touch and a smile or a hug or making eye contact with another soul and just offering, I see you, I validate that you are who you are. There's the supreme altruism of looking in the eyes of the illusion of the other and seeing oneself and then acting as one. Yeah.
We love the phrase, finding the sacred in the mundane.
Ah.
And a couple of questions ago, that was part of the question of the gentleman, how do I experience that on this plane? Well, we have a habit that we decided to form, and bear with us. We were in Europe in a car with a map open across and completely lost, and a stranger tapped on the window, saw where we were going, and led us there. And I said, from now on, whenever I see someone going, where am I in Philadelphia, I'm going to ask if they need directions. You can't believe the reaction you get. They are so delighted that someone stopped, and usually they don't. They're just deciding which way to go. But sometimes they're lost, and the fact that another reaches out, no matter what they heard about, what kind of city we live in, it's a moment of, I've been where you've been, how can I help you? And if they're receptive, you help them get to where they go. So it's, a tiny moment, but it's the sacred in the mundane. It's the highest you can do for them.
And sometimes the sacred in the mundane is most dramatic in times of tremendous tragedy. Then we see this automatic opening and outpouring of, can I help you? How can I help you? That's always there. That is an eternal essence of who and what we truly are. And it doesn't take much to try to be remembering of that. And therefore, if we know it, we can realize it, make it real. We can imagine it, and then we can make it real with the others. There's a wonderful little article called Theosophists by Definition. It's in magazine Theosophy 33, and it starts on page 265. The student that put the article together quotes HPB as writing this. When asked, is it easy to become a theosophist? She wrote, any person of average intellectual capacity and a leaning toward the metaphysical, of pure, unselfish life, who finds more joy in helping his neighbor than in receiving help himself, one who is ever ready to sacrifice his own pleasures for the sake of other people, and who loves truth, goodness, and wisdom for their own sake, not for the benefit they may confer, is a theosophist. And that's why you may hear so often in these rooms, I'm a student of theosophy, because, you know, we can check off, well, average intellectual capacity, okay, sometimes, yep. Leaning toward the metaphysical, do I tend to you know, harbor thoughts of the quote non-physical, does that turn me on in some way? Well, okay. And then it gets to the terms pure, unselfish life, who finds more joy in helping his neighbor than himself. Well, yeah, and some of us can catch ourselves saying, oh, gee, I was really looking for that attaboy in that moment. That wasn't done right. But one who is ever ready to sacrifice his own pleasures for the sake of other people, there's the process of perfectibility. There's the goal by which some of us are closet potential theosophists, others of us are well underway, and still others have bloomed fully. But loving truth, goodness, and wisdom for their own sake, not for the benefit that they confer, not for the path to adeptship, not for any goodies that might come along the path, or not for rapid unfolding of psychic powers, or but just for the purity of truth, goodness, and wisdom. That balance, that reality, is what does so much for so many with so little. Yeah.
We are really talking about putting a label on ourselves or others.
Please say that again.
Ah. We make the word theosophist a label.
Ah.
And the earlier comment was, if you strive for adepthood, that's wrong. If you strive to be a theosophist, that's wrong too. I mean, it's not what you're not striving to become, to be labeled in a certain way. And it's the labeling that I think is the danger.
It's the labeling, and I think early in the class I said something about as Westerners, as Americans, we want the definition. And even the title of this little article written in 1945, Theosophists by Definition, the whole point to the article is the definition is really tough. There is not one path. HPB writing said, follow not me, follow the path that I show. There are so many different avenues of blooming, and there's no one particular line to becoming a theosophist or to stepping into the process of being a theosophist. It's rather spiritual vision in action. And if we go back to the earlier comment about perfection, as long as we're looking to define in the external conditions of our lives, and as long as we're identifying with the body, with the personality, we're off base. We're making conditions. We're making distinctions. We're making limitations. We're creating that false sense of separateness. If we turn Godward, if we turn inward, and we begin to identify as soul residing in a body, as soul living through a personality, or as soul expressing through a personality, then we begin from a nicer starting point of saying no conditions, no attributes, no definitions, no distinctions, no judgments. I am one. You know, that wonderful namaste comment where we are one. There's one. Yeah.
That sometimes questions have a way of being framed in such a way that make the answers more elusive and set us off on a bit of a red herring chase. So when we ask who is a theosophist, I think you're right, we have a tendency to kind of label who is or isn't a theosophist, and it gets the dualistic mind going. But another way to frame the question is to ask who is a channel for theosophy, who is a channel for the energy or the teachings of theosophy, mm-hmm. and how well am I serving as a channel versus asking, did I qualify for a theosophist label yet? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think we need to work with our minds, because our minds have a way of having this associative pattern where once you ask the question a certain way, it goes off and it wants to judge, versus asking in a way that makes us reflect and evaluate how we're reaching the ideal and how we can better serve and improve. We can grow. Another comment is on altruism. I've been studying scientifically how people look and organism in the laboratory, and it seems that there is a biological reward that we receive when we act altruistically, and it's in two mechanisms that are related to each other. The first is that we have a vagus nerve that connects the
mm-hmm.
brain to our vital organs, and so activity in the vagus nerve is measured through vagal tone or variability in your heart rate, and it seems people who are altruistic have higher vagal tone, which is associated with higher happiness, well-being, less stress, and also associated with stronger willpower and self-control, higher social connectedness, just a lot of the positive things people are looking for. And by being altruistic, you increase your vagal tone, you increase your capacity for happiness, or your base rate for happiness. The second is oxytocin. Every time
yeah.
we connect and we hug people, our brain releases a gush of oxytocin that makes us feel really good inside. And the more altruistic people, or regularly altruistic people, compassionate people, generate a lot of oxytocin. And one of the benefits of metta meditation, or meditation on loving kindness that the Tibetan Buddhists and the Vipassana Buddhist practice, is that you send lots of oxytocin gushing through your system, and that actually deactivates your amygdala, or your flight response,
yeah.
and it reduces levels of cortisol in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an ingrained reason why you should do it. It brings you better health, better sleep, better rest, better harmony, better family reactions, better friendships. It's sort of built-in system.
It's a very interesting set of comments, and it's delightful to study science and medicine and see how far the research is coming, because what's actually going on is information that was first published in print in English in the Western Hemisphere in the late 1880s refers consistently to mind and spirit being the governance, being the creator of matter. And so as you're speaking and we're imagining and envisioning how to ideate, how to line up the thoughts that we hold meditatively and in action, how we line up our emotions. The science is producing the evidence that the early statements of the philosophy are exact and true, that mind influences matter, that the entire electromagnetic chemistry of what we call the body, working with incredible stimulation, has tremendous power resident in it if only we were to be fully cognizant and aware of the ethics of the scenario, and we were able to concentrate and be one-pointed and be consistent what we could generate in our own physicalities. But theosophy goes one step further, that it's not just about holding those thoughts and creating that emotion and holding the will and the concentration and the imagination so that the physical body being used can be healthier. The human being, mind and spirit working through the physical, is a dynamo. And the science you're referring to proves that it's a dynamo. Theosophy would add to that is that that is a limitless dynamo, and that as that change in the vagus nerve and the chemistry of the brain, as that is consistently being changed, it influences all of the points of intelligence or life, nerves, atoms, molecules, however you want to term those points of life, and that those lives go out of our physical environment and control, but out throughout the entire environment, and that as human dynamos, we can transmit that and generate that, not for the good of this body in which the soul lives, but for the entire environment and influence thereabouts. Was their hand up and down with the blue shirt, or no? No? Okay, yeah.
Just that if our motive for acting in a compassionate or altruistic way became the benefit it would bring me physically and emotionally, well, then we've lost it.
Mm.
Because that isn't the why. We think it would be easier to just ask yourself, as you said, when you arise in the morning, or when you're going to bed at night, am I being kind? Am I being honest? Am I being trustworthy? Am I being useful? Am I helpful? And we think that's safer than wondering about what is all of this bringing back to me, because we know it's a just universe. We will get the benefit of exactly what we do mm-hmm. give out.
And there's a lot of research being done that what theosophy, what has been written of in the East as skandhas and tendencies, that the influence and the effect that we put out does come back to us in future incarnations. We don't have to worry about it. It just is. The dynamo takes care of itself. That will all occur. But it's in the moment of how we use it that we can work the magic, literally, of assisting the other. Yeah.
Well, we just heard comments, and it struck a bell. Everyone remembers General Douglas MacArthur's last speech.
Well, maybe Douglas. Not.
Well, you have to be a certain age. And that last speech, he gave the secret to his success. And he said it was the core, the core, the core. Translate that into the French word for heart. Core, the core, the core. And the recent comment just made today in the whole world, you may be a physician, very highly intelligent and so forth in your profession and whatsoever, but that's not enough anymore, because it sees that theosophy is religion, not a religion, and many will not be able to continue to practice their profession until they approach these teachings. They don't call it theosophy, but it will be recognized immediately because it deals with the inner man. And MacArthur's speech, the heart, the heart, the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So it is religion, not
a religion. Yes, it is religion, and it is truth. It is not dependent on anyone knowing the word theosophy. One can walk into many of the major medical institutions in this city and even live there for a while and come to see how many souls, either on staff or among the patients, who are practicing theosophy, who are living according, they may not even know the science of the earlier comment. They may not know that science at all. But they are practicing medicine and brotherhood and altruism in a very different frame of reference. Walk into any of the hospitals in the vicinity, and you will find somewhere in the halls signs about meditation, yoga, Reiki, contemplation, good-heartedness, and you will find a very different kind of a practice going on. Acupuncture is being treated, massage therapy, all sorts of physical therapies, the onus being on the patient healing the patient with the assistance of the others in order also to turn around and assist the next patient in healing that one, and so on and so forth. And again, it is the heart being exhibited in action in a very pure way. Yeah.
You mentioned the principle of duality as cycles, the primary, second principle. You know, sunrise, sunset, low tide,
yeah,
high tide, etc. Everywhere in life we see this. My question is, if one practices altruism and kindness to goodness, does this imply that automatically somewhere else on the planet evil is created by definition?
an equal and opposite effect. So if a butterfly flaps its wings in one hemisphere, there's an earthquake in the other.
Equal
what do we?
Yeah,
equal and opposite
yeah.
effects.
Mm.
Yes.
We always understood that to be that you should act in a measured way, because like when you push a swinging door, if you push it gently, it moves gently. If you push it hard, it comes back hard. It's a potential, not an actuality. And who decides that potential? Humans. I can want to do something wicked, evil. I might have good influences around me, and I won't. So it isn't as though life is going to balance the one act against the other. It's that the potential for human choice is widened by the way we act.
Okay, and?
Well, this is something that was studied extensively by like Carl Jung.
Yeah.
And he discusses how the shadow is the other part of us which balances that
mm-hmm.
out. So he would argue that that is true, and we need to be a complete person that is truly acting out of the service of man. You have to honor all sides of you. So he would argue yes.
Okay, and your hand went up?
Yeah, my hand went up regarding, you know, if we just get back to who's a theosophist, we recall HPB saying that, you know, theosophy is not for everyone, it's for those who want it. So it's like you have to work toward it. And some of her last words were, be theosophists, work for theosophy. So if you're not putting out the effort to do so, you know, it seems like, no, not everybody on planet Earth today is a theosophist. So then who is? The Lodge regards as theosophists, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity. And the word true is in that sentence, and that's, I think that's what really says something, because to be of service to others, I mean, Attila the Hun was of service to his lieutenants so that they could accomplish what they had to accomplish, but was he a theosophist? We don't know. But true service to humanity, we think, is to do what's necessary that you can do to be the example to help somebody else get a little more light to recognize that universal brotherhood is the truth.
Mm.
So being nice to people is nice to do, but the true service to others is more along the lines of helping them. Because we can't, Crosby said, we can't tell another the truth, but we can help others find the truth within themselves. And to do that, we have to do it by example.
And we live in a very, very interesting set of times, in that the electronic media that we've suspended for this hour allows us to know, to be aware of incredible happenings around the world as well as next door. We have more awareness than ever before of what is happening and how it's unfolding, and therefore we have a tremendous opportunity to consider karmic patterns, to consider the duality of good and evil, to try to see, is there a collective consciousness? And probably the best bumper sticker of all is the one that says, think globally, but act locally. So we are planted, we're here to bloom together, and to make our very best effort. And we can look at something that appears to be incredibly evil in action, not judge the participants, rather turn it around and say, what lesson is there for me? How can I act today to offset that evil, to undo that evil, to assure that I would never participate in such evil? And in that process of turning it constantly, I'm open-minded, I'm aware of things. What's the lesson of value to me? And how can I rededicate my energies, my potentialities to undoing, to take the lemon and make lemonade? Our time is up. The building opens at 5:30 on Wednesday. There's a reference library full of wonderful things, including a series of articles called Great Theosophists. And we offer that as food for thought, things to be considered historically what can be accomplished, and what we might consider to be done. Have a great day.